So now we come to the heart of this service, where we're going to hear short reflections from Bridget first, and then Jenna, and then Rich, who represent three somewhat different eras in the military of the United States. And each one of them will be explaining how the military changed them, their perspective, both the goods and the more challenging parts of being part of the military. So, Bridget, if you'd like to come up first, and then the rest of you afterwards.
Thank you, Alex, and everybody else. And to those of you who have heard a version of this before, I'm not sorry you knew what you were getting into. First, I'd like to say thank you to all of you in the audience for supporting veterans. I would also like to thank my husband, Chief Warrant Officer IV, retired, and Master Chief Jim Reeb, and all of the rest of my veteran brothers and sisters in arms for being my family when my own could or would not step up to the plate. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't be here today. I have a poem that I'd like to read in remembrance of one of my former shipmates. It's Invictus by William Ernest Henley. And this is in memory of my former shipmate, belated mentor and friend, Senior Chief Whitmire, Vince, and all those who are not here to celebrate with us today. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years shall find and find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll, I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul. My 10 years, 4 months, and 25 days of active duty Navy service are the reason I'm standing here talking to you today, and not just because Alex asked me to. As a female veteran, I am in one of the most elite clubs in the United States. According to a U.S. Department of Labor 2019 Gender and Veterans Demographics Report, there are nearly 2 million living women veterans in the United States. Women currently make up approximately 10% of the overall veteran population. Veterans make up 14% of the men in America, but among women in America, only 1.5% are veterans. That is a very small number. And as such, you can imagine it's one of the biggest so-called boys' clubs still in existence as a valid career path. Well, we'll get back to that in a minute. The beauty and cruel reality of the U.S. military is that it is one of the few ways to escape systematic poverty in this country for the physically fit young person. Growing up in the poverty of Northern California migrant drug slums, to a bipolar alcoholic absentee father, a codependent addict mother, and an abusive stepfather, I took full advantage of this. It's not like I couldn't have gone to college simply on my own merit. I graduated high school with a 3.8-something GPA, which is pretty respectable considering my home environment. But how do you get scholarships when your parents waste all of the money that you could have spent on taking the ACTs and SATs on drugs and alcohol? This was in 2001, not a time when the internet had quite so many resources for the itinerant high school graduate. When I enlisted in August of 2001, the Navy opened a path of success for me that nobody else had. They saw something in me, which took shape as I was selected for Mandarin Chinese language training at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, which is renowned for being one of the best and most difficult language schools in the world. I graduated second in my class to a native speaker. I went on to be one of the top 10% of the Navy's Chinese linguists worldwide. The Navy paid for me to go to Middlebury College's prestigious summer language immersion program, not once, but twice. I was one of several sailors put in charge of $1 million-plus language training program that was supposed to be allocated among 200-plus sailors, so they trusted me a lot. And in 2012, I decided to leave the Navy after a toxic leadership environment left me with little to no support after my mother died unexpectedly following my first divorce. I then plunged headfirst into the world of military intelligence, working alongside National Security Agency civilians, doing a lot of really cool stuff that I'd have to kill you if I told you. What I can tell you is that I finally got diagnosed with narcolepsy about 6 months into my new job after having suffered with it for 15 years. At that time, I was 29, and I've had it since I was 14. Though I tried to find a treatment that worked, and my NSA leadership went above and beyond to try to accommodate my disability, I was forced to resign in February of 2017 because the treatments for narcolepsy ended up being worse than the disease itself. Professional development wasn't the only thing that the Navy and NSA gave me. I also met some of the most amazingly compassionate and intelligent people, one of whom is sitting in the audience right now. These people have been here more for me than my own family. When I left my abusive ex-husband in June 2020, isolated and alone in Southeast Georgia during COVID, my veteran friends from all over the globe sent me funds to get set up on my own. In October of 2021, when I almost died of a pharmaceutical injury, my Air Force veteran friend, Jessica Bruce, flew down to Jacksonville, Florida, where I was living at the time, from DC on her own dime to get me a place where I had more support because I was in a wheelchair at the time. Even more of my friends from the service helped get me to this little corner of Northwest Pennsylvania that I now occupy, not the least of which is my best friend and husband, Jim Reeb, who is a legend of Russian naval cryptology in his own right. But it was some of the very problems that plague female veterans today that left me in this lurch in the first place. There is still rampant sexism present in the military to this day, despite women having served in the U.S. military since before World War II. I have had senior military leadership blatantly address my breasts instead of my face. Men who are less qualified than me were selected over me and other women for no other reason. People routinely thank my husband for his service and completely ignore mine. But most dangerously, female veterans' medical needs are frequently trivialized and rarely appropriately addressed. Neither active duty military nor veterans are provided abortion services or comprehensive reproductive services at all, even before the most recent Supreme Court decision. Not only this, but military and VA doctors rarely take female veterans' symptoms, especially pain, seriously, leading female veterans to have generally overall higher rates of physical and mental health problems, and their severity is also worse. And there are studies documenting this. I'm not just pulling this out of my, nowhere. Medical gaslighting by VA doctors is the reason why I currently have no diagnosis for the autonomic nervous system disorder I developed as a result of that pharmaceutical injury last year. They refuse to believe that my tremors and digestive problems that occurred 3 days after taking a certain combination of medications that I'd never taken before was actually pharmaceutical related. And the responses ranged from dismissive to outright accusing me of having psychiatric issues or being a drug seeker. As we discussed earlier, I am sadly not the exception. What am I trying to say by all this? I love the United States Navy, and I am humbly privileged to have been of service to our country as one of its service members. Not because I think the system is perfect, and I obviously don't speak for all veterans. But we're doing a disservice to our nation by allowing the marginalization of disadvantaged minorities to continue in the military and taking vicious advantage of a system that covertly forces intelligent children of poverty into quote-unquote voluntary military service. Mr. Rogers, one of my heroes, defined love as an active noun, like to struggle. To love someone is to strive to accept that person exactly the way she is or he is, right here and now. Aside from the gendered language and the word person, this describes how I feel about the military very much. In order to love the military, we must understand it for what it is right now, not for what we want it to be. And for those of you in the audience wondering, but what about the positive? First, I'd ask you to remember and think about the many positive things that I actually brought up, like the education and the professional development, and think about why you didn't focus on them or remember them. And second, why do you need there to be a positive message? Is it for your comfort, or is it for mine? With that, I'll leave you to Jana. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Janet Lance. I've been a member here 10 years. When Alex approached me about speaking today, I was excited to be offered the opportunity and said yes without much thought. You see, no one has ever asked me to speak about my military experience before. In fact, the only time I ever spoken in public about it was when I was in college, and it was about a specific incident. It's easy to speak about my experiences. And before I go any further, I would like to say that all service members are unique people with very distinct experiences. In saying that, I have to acknowledge that it's difficult to speak on the topic of how those experiences changed me. On first reflection, I thought, well, it didn't change me. I'm the same person I was when I enlisted. But then I thought about some more, forcing myself to think about my military experience, who I was before the military and who I am now. And I realized my experiences definitely changed me. I enlisted for 3 years in the United States Army in 1984. Shortly after my mother passed away, I did not have good family support system and could no longer afford college. I had a halfway decent job, but no real direction in my life. I had been out of high school for 4 years and had completed 2 years of school before Reaganomics and my mother's illness forced me to leave college. At 22 and trying to figure out what to do with my life, I thought the Army was the best choice for me. I had done well in school, had good test scores, was very physically fit from competing in various athletic competitions. I could have chosen any branch of the service, but settled on the Army because being on land and the physical aspect appealed to me. I fell hook, line, and sinker for the enlistment campaign at the time, which was Be All That You Could Be. So I guess you could say I was a bit naive. I believed I would be able to succeed while serving my country. I thought if I gave 100% that I would be appreciated and respected for my efforts. Reflecting on my military service, I was forced to recognize the trauma I endured. Not only was I exposed to harmful chemicals at my permanent duty station, which has led to many I serve with becoming seriously ill and dying, but I also endured harassment because of sexual trauma I experienced while in advanced individual training at Fort Sam Houston, Texas. I reported what occurred at Fort Sam, and a criminal investigation took place, as well as 3 congressional inquiries filed on my behalf. Many of my chain of command were dishonorably discharged or allowed to retire in lieu of discharge. Any hopes of a military career were now over for me, as I was made to pay for my actions. Threats were even made on my life. This went on for 2.5 years. So I suffered not at the hands of my enemy or a foreign nation, but by people representing my own country. I finally recognized why I feel uncomfortable when anyone does find out that I'm a veteran and offers the well-meaning thank you for your service. When I hear this, I remember the trauma I endured and can only cringe, so I never respond. I now know the proper response is, thank you for your support. I will try to remember this in the future. It would be a little easier, I think, if they said thank you for your sacrifice. The word service seems to be triggering. Well, in spite of all that happened, I loved my job in the military where I worked in preventive medicine. I did feel like I was making a difference. I would have stayed if I could, but I could not get away from my chain of command and fully use the skills I had learned. I did excel at the job I was assigned, weaponry, and all the physical aspects of being a soldier. I failed at fulfilling my chain of command's expectations of a young woman in service to her country. For this, I have no regrets. When I joined the military, I naively believed that they had a higher standard and that things that went on in the civilian world did not happen in the Army. I was proven wrong. The same people who serve in the military are the people you meet in everyday life with all the same issues of the average person. There are people with addictions, there are people with dealing with domestic violence, and people dealing with their own past traumas. There are also people with criminal minds. Because the military believes they are better than the civilian world, these issues are often not dealt with. Without a war to focus on, the emphasis becomes on combat readiness. There's a lot of what we call hurry up and wait, or idle time. Time for inappropriate activity to occur. In spite of all this, there were good people in the military and in this world, and I've never stopped recognizing that. While in the military, there were people that spoke up for me, fellow soldiers, people in military leadership, and three people in Congress. Unfortunately, in this instance, the good could not overcome the bad will of a few. I went through a lot in the Army, so it's hard to believe that I thought my experiences did not change me. Trauma changes people, and while my core beliefs did not change, how I view the world most definitely changed. I was able to see and experience one of the good old boy clubs at work. When people speak of systematic injustice, I know exactly what they are speaking of. I would like to think that things have gotten better since I left. Unfortunately, they have not. I continue to hear news reports of sexual assaults and murders of service people by service people. Suicide numbers also remain very high. And as you heard from Bridget, the previous speaker, she experienced similar things to what I experienced in the military. So, during my military experience, I lost my innocence and naivety, but I did not lose my faith in humanity. The experience as a whole has left me more grounded but guarded. I still believe change is possible if we all work together, but we must first acknowledge there is a problem. I've now been out of the service for 35 years. I would have liked to have done more in the service, but the universe has other plans for me. I have been able to accomplish much since leaving the service. So to my fellow service people, I say thank you for your sacrifice. And to the civilians who support and love us, I say thank you for your support.
Clearly, my experience in the military was very different from Bridget's and Jana's in a number of ways. And as I was thinking about this, I thought, well, maybe I'll just get up here and do this extemporaneously. But I decided I better write out some of my thoughts. So in the process of doing this presentation, I may get lost and bear with me, please. During the Korean War years, there was heavy drafting on college campuses, but I volunteered for the draft and entered the U.S. Army 1 week after turning 19. So, you know, it was a long time ago. My father, who had been an excellent breadwinner, but he was also an alcoholic, and he had died unexpectedly a few years earlier when I was still in high school, and left our family without any financial resources. My mother was a traditional housewife of that era, and she had not finished high school and had no job skills. And my older brother, my only sibling, had already been drafted into the Army and was serving. So I had managed to complete just my first year of college, but it certainly became clear to me that my athletic scholarship was insufficient to pay for my education. So Much to my mother's sorrow, I entered the Army via the draft, hoping that I would then be able to help her out financially, because things were pretty rough. So when I finished my 8 weeks of basic training, I fully expected to be assigned or deployed to a command in Korea, like most of the guys that were in my company. That's where most of them went, by the hundreds. But instead, by some circumstance that will be forever unknown to me, I was plucked out. I was assigned to an instrument repair school at Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland. Why, I'll never know, because I had no particular skills or aptitude for this kind of work, repairing instruments. It just was not anything I thought I could ever do. And then when I completed the 3 month schooling, surprisingly, I was then selected to become an instructor, along with several of college graduates who were my friends. Most of the people I was in the service with were college graduates or had a fair amount of college under their belt. Anyway, that's what happened. I was selected to become an instructor in this ordnance school at Aberdeen Proving Grounds. But before I could do that, I had to then go on for instructor training. So I don't know, I had 6, 7, 8 more weeks of training, learning to put together lesson plans and how to make presentations. And that was really new to me. I was only 19. Hell, I hardly knew how to tie my shoes. So that's what I did. I ended up spending the bulk of those remaining 2 years teaching young people how to repair these instruments, mostly instruments that were used in artillery pieces. They were sighting instruments used in artillery pieces and even in tanks. Well, as I began to consider how to respond to Alex's request that I talk about how my stint in the military changed my life, I realized that the main effect it had on me was receiving the GI Bill. Now, some of you might not know what the GI Bill was, but at that time in my life, the GI Bill enabled those who had served and were honorably discharged to qualify for educational benefits. So that's what I did. I certainly wasn't going to be able to go to college on my own. I enrolled in college with the GI Bill, and I was able to finish the remaining part of my education at college due to that benefit. And I know it doesn't sound very momentous than by most people's standards, I guess, but I thought about it, I thought, well, does this sound cheesy that's what I'm going to say was the best thing that could happen? Certainly there's no epiphany here, Alex, unlike my previous talk. But I realized, had I not gone in the Army at the time I did in my life, I probably wouldn't have been able to finish college. I don't know what I would have ended up doing. I certainly wouldn't have finished college then gone on to graduate school, where fortunately I met Corrine and moved on into a career in counseling as a counseling psychologist, spent many years at Allegheny College before I retired, lived in this community, decided we would stay in this community with this church, and you know, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to meet you folks. It's been life-changing and for the better. Thank you.
Sometimes the appropriate thanks to three wonderful people is to applaud. So let's please applaud if you wish.